NIST is a government framework, and it's updated by many people that are working on the NIST program. And there's many additional documents within the NIST publication set that come out and they're updated. And so NIST has been around for a while. FISMA, the law of federal information systems, has been around since 2002. So FISMA is the law. NIST is kind of the roadmap of how to go about the compliances for government systems.
This is the Future of Cyber Risk podcast, brought to you by Team Cymru. I'm your host, David Monnier, fellow at Team Cymru. Let's jump right into today's episode.
Hey, everyone, and thanks for listening to another episode of the Future of Cyber Risk podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Eric Adams, CEO and CISO at Federal Cyber Defense Solutions. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, David. Super excited to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. We're glad you could make it. So typically, Eric, how I like to get started is a little bit of your CV, if you will. Tell us about who you are, where you came from, and what made you decide to be where you're at now.
Sure thing. I'll start with the most recent. So I'm the CEO and CISO of Federal Cyber Defense Systems. It's a very small company. We've had some 1099s in where we need them. It's contract type of work. I'm doing contract for government type of systems for companies that are in the government ecosystem that have federal compliance, and also doing some little bit of contract work for government as well. And just based on a lot of experience, I find that that's really fulfilling work. And it's something that if you have that knowledge, you feel really good about being able to help in those areas. It can be very complex. A little bit before that, CISO for about 5 years through two different fintechs from about 2018 till the end of 2022. Learned a lot about different SWIFT compliance, banking compliance, PCI compliance. And before that, worked a combination of about 22 years, 19 of them with HP and about 2.5 with IBM. The last part of the HP was through FedRAMP 10 years ago, started through federal cloud authorization for one of my customers through Department of Defense, and found this program, FedRAMP, and I had NIST background before that. So I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. So I ended up building one of the first FedRAMP SaaS clouds for security, which was authorized 2015, and then helped IBM do that afterwards as well. So really exciting. I like NIST as a background to be able to apply to cloud systems and also to on-premise systems.
Okay. So two kind of questions fell out of that for me. So the first is, why don't you highlight some? Because I know a lot of our listeners are familiar with things like NIST and ISO and things like that, but a lot of folks may not be familiar with what makes FedRAMP unique. So why don't you tell us some of the things that make that specific set of compliance thing categories, if you will, unique, and how you guys go about solving those?
Yeah, sure thing. So a lot of people in the industry, they have experience with some different compliance frameworks. It might be SOC 1, SOC 2, PCI, HIPAA, or whatever their market is in, or maybe a global compliance like ISO 27001, in which their customers want them to get compliant with that type of regulation. And so they're used to those type of compliances and those security controls that go along with them. And ISO 27001 is very policy-based, but also there's parameterized type of controls with ISO 27002 and others with privacy and different other ISO frameworks. So it's almost like a Venn diagram where there's overlaps of commonalities, even though they ask the question a little bit different, with other compliance frameworks, including NIST. And NIST is a government framework, and it's updated by many people that are working on the NIST program. And there's many additional documents within the NIST publication set that come out and they're updated. And so NIST has been around for a while. FISMA, the law of federal information systems, has been around since 2002. So FISMA is the law. NIST is kind of the roadmap of how to go about the compliances for government systems. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is when I was working for one of the large computer companies, I was taking care of security compliance for a NIST system that was an on-premise system. And then that's when the FedRAMP opportunity came around. We were already building a NIST type of cloud data center. So we had that in our pocket. And then we saw the availability to sell a SaaS cloud that we could build on top of that. And so that's kind of how that came about. That's kind of the differences between the frameworks of understanding that NIST is very parameter driven and very thorough.
Mm-hmm. So for staffing of this in that space, are you able to lean on folks that, for example, and again, this is for manpower, are you able to lean on folks who kind of cut their teeth in AWS or one of the other cloud systems? And do they have a hard time kind of translating what they learned there into the FSMA approved platforms?
Well, what's really cool about the major cloud vendors, it could be AWS, could be Google Cloud Platform, GCP, it could be Microsoft Azure, it could be Oracle Cloud Infrastructure or other. What's really awesome is they are FedRAMP approved cloud. So they've gone through that NIST framework. And so they are able to service you building your SaaS on top of it using their security control infrastructure and services, which is really awesome. So they know how all of that works. But then when you're putting your cloud application on top of their infrastructure, you're responsible for those controls. But then when you're completing the compliance and when you get audited, you can leverage those type of cloud data center controls. And so really it's nice that all of that is built into those large data center, cloud data center type of systems like AWS, GCP, Azure, Oracle, and others.
Sure. And do those vendors in turn, since they are already approved platforms, are they able to help folks that are trying to put their applications into that space? Do you find them to be useful? Or is it more like, trust us, this is all good type of an effort?
That's a good question. And they do have, I would say, different ways to be able to help with cloud service providers, with SaaS providers, to be able to onboard onto their platform, right? And so they have that ability. But then really, it is the responsibility and onus of a cloud service provider to be able to go through and do an assessment, like a gap assessment, understand what controls they meet for any type of requirement. It could be for federal cloud, it could be for something else that they have to have a compliance for, and understand their part in doing that. And then understand what that data center layer or cloud infrastructure as a service layer, what they're responsible for. And then be able to complement those type of controls, saying, okay, here's the ones at the cloud data center control level for our people that log onto systems. But then in our application, we have our own set of maybe roles-based access control that the customer can control. And so we're responsible for those particular ones. And that's how it complements each other, that there are those different levels of access controls, or it might be encryption, it might be something else. But there's a lot of documentation to help with those application vendors or those cloud service providers to be successful. And also there are, I guess, consultants who have gone down this road before. This is something that I've done, but other ones that's what they do. In fact, in the FedRAMP ecosystem, there are third-party audit organizations that are certified. They're called 3PAO. And so when I first saw this, they were just audit only. Mm-hmm. But then now they're also one that can be your auditor, but then also a different one that is your consultant to help build it to the specifications. And that's recommended, especially for cloud service providers, when we're talking about FedRAMP authorization, to be able to use that model, because that will set you up for success. And they know the cloud infrastructure as a service model very well. And so they're able to build it to those specifications. And then you bring your SaaS and you figure out how to make it work within that kind of build that they built for you.
Sure. Okay. So I know you said you're a small shop and whatnot, but what does your day-to-day look like? I'm sure you're involved in all kinds of stuff, but overall, how would you describe your day-to-day?
Yeah, primarily I am supporting a federal cloud instance right now, and all of the things that happen along with that, like change management, security management, understanding different nuances that things have to be done from my experience that work in a FedRAMP environment. And so that's what I'm primarily doing. Mm-hmm. Also, I do try to help as much as possible with other people that are trying to get authorizations, whether it's for, maybe it's for Swift payment systems or ISO 27001 or PCI or SOC 1, SOC 2, or FedRAMP. I get a lot of those requests and I really like to share that information. And so I like doing that on podcasts or just people having conversations with me.
Yeah, awesome. So tell me, in your time, going out, meeting with folks and seeing how others are doing it, whatnot, what's the main things that folks get wrong about their approaches? Like, what's the number one thing that you find yourself kind of illuminating for people and saying, hey, the way you're doing it isn't the right way. This is what you should be doing. Any categories people should be conscious of that a lot of people get wrong and things like that?
Yes, there are. And it's not from their intentions. It's just what they find when they start looking at what they think is the best path, the best way forward. And so I think a lot of people end up going down dead ends and wasting a lot of time and maybe a lot of money. Because when I first did, let's take the federal cloud authorization, for instance, when I was doing that 10 years ago, I had the luxury of all of our people in that department had a NIST background in that data center infrastructure. And so we had that luxury. And also in that very large computer company, I was able to pull capabilities off the shelf and work with teams and to be able to configure this and make it successful. And the reason was we wanted to see it be successful. We wanted to build on top of this infrastructure as a service and sell software as a service. So if you're doing this as a smaller company, you have to use third-party services. And there are different things that you have to kind of guess and make your best estimate at the time. However, if you've gone down this before, you know how to navigate this process. And also another thing is your timelines. You don't know how long it's going to take to complete a very large type of a framework such as FedRAMP, because there's other people involved. There's the third-party auditors. There is the government side who checks and makes sure that you're doing things correctly to advance you to the next phase. And so that's one big thing. And also having management commitment, being able to really research what framework you're trying to get a certification or authorization for, being able to give your management a very good, clear picture of what that commitment looks like. Because I know that that's one of the very big parts that it says, even in the security policies and procedures, in order to make it successful, you must have management commitment. And that means that they understand that timeline. They understand the investment effort that you're going to continue putting in that investment with people, time, processes, and that they're able to build that system to the correct requirements and keep it operational. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's a big part, just knowing that, being able to describe that to management and them giving you the okay, saying, okay, here's the investment. We're going to be able to sell this and service this for this customer. And here's the upfront cost that it's going to take to do that. And so we realize maybe the break even is a little bit different than our other cloud systems, but we now get the full picture and we have commitment behind it.
Okay. So a lot of folks out there undoubtedly are in this position where they need to, whether it be regulatory reasons or whatnot, but they need to have these frameworks applied. You know, they have to meet these specific criteria and whatnot. But a lot of times, a lot of folks confuse their compliance with effectiveness because they're not the same thing. What are your thoughts on how do folks reasonably approach measuring effectiveness of these types of frameworks, in particular, not just specifically to FedRAMP, but like in the broader sense of cyber as a whole? Because that's, I think, one of the biggest things that folks struggle with is like, okay, well, we've implemented all of these controls, but now what? And I think that now what piece is something that a lot of people struggle with. What advice do you have for folks for measuring that kind of effectiveness so that they know if, well, you know, the controls they've used as opposed to just meeting some type of compliance checkbox, but that they actually work?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest things that I like to talk about because I've seen ways that it is effective and that it's successful. And a one-liner is you can be compliant and still not be secure. And I think that really the way that you should approach it is your first pass, you can make sure that you're compliant with the controls. That's great. But then you take another overview layer of it and you say, okay, we understand the market we're in. We understand the attack surface and the different threats for this particular application. And there's some of these things that we really need to uplift the security on. And how do we do that? How do we do it effectively? Do we need to bring in a capability or a configuration or person or something to put attention at this? And what I've seen that's been really great, and I learned this from third parties coming in and doing a security program assessment, and then learning how to do a security program assessment myself based on looking at different domains of security controls, whether it be encryption, access control, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then also trying to figure out in the market that you're in and competitors maybe in that market, trying to gauge how well they are and comparing where your system, where you're doing good in some domains and where you could be doing better and making better progress in the others. And that also tracks into project management and into budgeting. So for instance, a CISO, a lot of the time that you're using, is being able to look at your budget and also analyzing what your team is doing and analyzing your security software and systems and operations, making sure it is effective and continually gauging that in the market, and then being able to make changes where it's needed. And so you might displace some capabilities with newer ones or more effective ones. You might be able to overlap with some where needed, where you feel that there's a fit for that. And so you're constantly doing that. So I think really a security program assessment and being able to say, okay, here, auditor or customer, you might be on a customer prospect call and you say, the reason why we put this in place for this control is because we felt that it really needed extra attention. We did that to protect the data, protect customer data, protect intellectual property from our company, protect our own employees. And that was the reason that we did it, was we felt at a risk-based level that we analyzed this very closely and determined that this was something important to do.
Okay. So one of the things, so I interface with a lot of folks that work in SOCs and places like that, where it's their job to kind of assess the signal that comes out of the policy, right? So in particular around access controls and things like that. So we're thinking, you know, system level, right? But in a modern system, in particular in a cloud where you may have distributed applications, right? That's a lot of signals. And one of the things that we hear a lot of folks talk about is like, you know, what you could think of as reporting fatigue or alert fatigue, where they're struggling with kind of this flow of data that's coming in, and it gets very hard for them to not only triage, but then prioritize the results of that triage as well, right? Like if everything that comes out the other side is the worst category, category one or whatever you want to call it, well, you still have to prioritize within that. What advice do you have or strategies do you know of for folks that are kind of dealing with the reality of the application of these types of controls?
Well, I think you said the key word there, and it's prioritization, but is it prioritization by a type of vulnerability? Well, that already exists. And so it's really something has to put it in context, because if you have a vulnerability, number one, is it exploitable? Number two, is it internet facing? Number three, does anyone have access to this thing, or is the package even running, right? Mm-hmm. Is it like inert? So you have different systems that are able to give you that telemetry that then should provide another layer to give you the prioritization to look at this and say, okay, maybe it's some attack path analysis that tells us, yeah, this is exploitable. Here's a map how somebody would go in, exploit it, exfiltrate data, and here's how they would do it successfully based on your configurations of your network, mm-hmm. of your firewalls, of your application, of your OS level patching, of your access controls, of your encryption. Here's how they would do it. And here's the means to be able to stop that. And so there's software that is able to do that, mm-hmm. has the ability to do that. And so that gives you a starting point, because if you just look at vulnerabilities, it's overwhelming. You might have thousands. And where do you start? You just start with the criticals and highs. That doesn't do you a lot of good unless you have the context. Also, another point to this too is continuous monitoring. Again, reverting back to federal cloud authorization with the FedRAMP program, continuous monitoring are things that you do on a cadence. And so you might have checking your access controls every 90 days and validating those and getting rid of old systems or locking old accounts or system accounts that haven't been used in a certain period of time, and then eventually getting rid of those. You might have vulnerability reports that are monthly to show how are you going to patch these vulnerabilities. And to be able to say, okay, yeah, this one, we're going to change from a high to maybe a medium or a moderate. And because like it's a package that's not active, that's not internet facing or something like that. So really that's the continuous part that people need to be doing in storing their evidence and then being able to show it to auditors when they need to, whether it's annually or more frequent than that.
Sure. So, you know, when you mention context, it makes me think two of the factors that I think, and they're kind of headwinds or almost like attritional factors that I think a lot of folks are facing out there, is the average turnaround for a CISO is something like 18 to 20 something months. And I would be surprised if folks could really get a handle on the business that they're working to defend in that time. And so you have to get this kind of business impact context from somewhere, and things like appetite for risk from the organization itself. These are factors that you need to know, because in particular, when you're talking about budgetary pressures, like to decide what to buy. Well, some of that might be a, well, this can wait on the security side because we need new enter whiz bang contraption on the other side that we need, right? Maybe it's more storage or some kind of operational thing or who knows, but there's a bunch of other competitors for those same dollars, right? So being that you do a fair bit of consulting as well, you are kind of this perpetual CISO who has to come in and figure these things out. What advice do you have for CISOs that are in these potentially high turnover positions for them to be able to sit down and extract that context so that they can understand what the business is expecting and what the business needs? No offense to the regulators, no offense to compliance bodies, no offense to those folks, but a company that's out of business doesn't need any of those things, right? So there's the stay in business is always priority zero. So given that, what advice do you have for folks to approach, whether it be the board or the CEO, or who do you propose they talk to? And do you have any example questions you might ask people?
Yeah, David, there's a lot in there. So I'm kind of making a mental note of how to be able to break that down. But you said some super important things. And I think one of the first things that you said is a lot of CISOs recently are only at the job maybe 18 to 24 months. And that really only gives them a small amount of time to be effective because they want to gauge what's going on and ask a lot of questions from everyone, the board level, the other C level, the other business departments, if they're developing software, working closely with software engineering. And so that gives them a time to make sure what is working well is working. And then also maybe fixing something that they feel is a big risk right away. But then also being able to, like I said, do a security program assessment and fix things risk-based and be able to fix them in a prioritized manner. And you would see a lot of these like career CISOs, which is great, that have been with the company for a long time, but lately you're not seeing them. And so they're kind of doing what I'm doing. We just had some conversations about this. They're advising other companies and giving them their best advice to be able to put them in the right position so that they don't run into any major problems, right? And so we're using, pulling from that experience and guiding them in the right direction. Another thing that you mentioned too is the regulators. I feel that they really help. They might, I guess, challenge you, which is good because you want to be challenged. I feel like it's a partnership where there might be three parts of the triangle. So back to the case of federal cloud authorization, you've got your third-party auditor, you've got the cloud service provider, and then you've also got that government entity. And so when you get all of those in partnership pushing each other, you get a better result as a more secure cloud system. And so I think that's really important. That's the way that I look at it is, yes, they're doing their job, which makes you do your job better.
Yeah, awesome. So now federal space is not my forte, but I do track this type of stuff. But do I remember correctly that the implementation deadlines for a lot of the FISMA had a couple pushbacks where they had set a target and then they ended up extending some of those? Am I remembering this correctly? There were, as the components of this were approved, first it was like must be by certain day, and then they adjusted that language to like should be by those days. Does that sound accurate? And if so, do you think there were like negative side effects from that? And then if inaccurate, do you think that the policies as they are in place today are adequate to protect what are arguably the most critical systems, you know, in the United States, at least? Do you think it's enough?
Yeah, great question, David. And I would say, well, to the question of some of the FISMA type of rules that are to be applied, I see sometimes that this does happen, that there's the best intentions to apply a rule at a certain time, but then in reality, it's harder to be able to apply that. And so maybe there's a reason to be able to pull that back and wait for some extra time and understand how it's going to be applied. And so that happens, and that's fine. One thing that's really big that happened about a year ago in December, so at the end of 2022, FedRAMP had been codified into law. So people, agencies using cloud systems, if it was, it had to be a FedRAMP cloud system, it had to be FedRAMP authorized. And so that's a big rule as well. And if you look at it in the whole ecosystem of things that company or that's working in federal environment or an agency that's using, all of those components should be on a plan to get FedRAMP authorized if they're not. And so that's a lot of pressure. So I think that it's a lot of pressure on companies to go through that authorization, especially where Absolutely. They might not understand it at first, or they might have had a little bit of understanding of it, but not really the whole picture. And so it makes it a lot harder for them.
Yeah, absolutely. In particular, in this space where folks have bespoke offerings, where they're like, their focus is on the deliverable to the federal government and not so much like, well, how do we get there? And for those folks, I bet it's probably perceptively at least some huge burden where they're like, no, wait a minute, I need to do all of this stuff, but we were just doing it just fine and you were happy with it. I would imagine it's pretty eye-opening for those folks to then had to come back and figure those things out. Presumably, good thing that folks such as yourself are out there that they can call on for that kind of help. So being mindful of time, let me roll into our last two questions here. The first being, get out your crystal ball. And give me what you anticipate the next, say, 5 years to look like. And again, I hate to keep asking this question, but do you think the path we're on is going to be good enough?
Great question. I wish I had a crystal ball. That would help a lot of things in many areas. But I would say we're always trying to build more automation into our systems. And I've seen automation into GRC. I helped work on some of those probably about 5 or so years ago. And there's also automation with artificial intelligence, which I think is really great if it's used properly. It's kind of like a car. You could use a car to go help somebody, like an ambulance helps somebody, or you could use a car to rob a bank, right? To be able to have the getaway car. So it just depends on how you use it. And I see artificial intelligence to be used, if it's used for good, and if there's IT security governance controls around it, just like with anything else. And also understanding how third parties are using it and understanding on a data level, what data are you putting into it and where is it being shared and what control you have of that data? That's super important. But also things like, I've got some friends that are working on OWASP top 10 for artificial intelligence. And so that's a good place to look to understand some of the security, I guess, bad things that can happen with artificial intelligence and being able to use a methodology that you're looking for things. So things like prompt injections, that's a big thing. Like when you're sending prompts and you've got scripts to send prompts to AI to return something back, is somebody able to get in the middle of that and change it and change the integrity or even confidentiality and pull things out of it? Mm-hmm. So those are things to think about. But I think crystal ball, people are going to start using some of the AI concepts, but also more with automation. And we're probably going to be doing a lot of the same things. And I think we're going to use people, humans, wiser than we were before, because we are seeing this change of like the CISO role. We're seeing a lot of companies wanting to hire CIOs with previous CISO experience. We're seeing a lot of the regulations changing on maybe penalties if you are doing things wrong with security and being negligent, which I think that's good. But on the other side, being a CISO, previous CISO, and advising CISO, you want to be really careful and be able to protect yourself to make sure that you're not doing something that's incorrect. And you should be doing that anyway. You should be meeting with your legal officers, your financial officers, your CEO, your board, making sure that what you're doing is correct. And if you have to speak to any materiality or anything like that, then you're prepared to do so. So I think that that's going to be something we're going to see in the future as well.
Okay. Well, I know I said there were only two more questions, so I'm going to call this a half question related to the last one. It's a follow-on, not a whole new question. But anyway, so AI, as related to FedRAMP, are there specific models that are isolated in that space that people can make use of, or is kind of building up the models kind of their burden if they're going to make use of it? Because obviously you shouldn't be calling out to something like a public LLM if you're working with classified data, for example, and those additional record types that are related to classified programs. Like, for example, HIPAA is powerful on its own, right? But the HIPAA data related to, for example, all of the high side operators in the world, wouldn't that be useful to know that, you know, genetically all of SEAL Team 6 is susceptible to some type of genetic attack, right? I mean, these types of things would be very powerful for someone to know about. And if you were working with that type of data, though it's maybe not classified itself, the ramifications would be massive, right? So you wouldn't want to be calling out to, no offense to them, but you wouldn't want to be like leveraging ChatGPT-4 if you were working with that kind of data, because we know that that data ends up in their models, right? So do FedRAMP providers have containerized models that people can use, or do you see that as something that will need to be coming down the line as well?
That's a great question. I think it's evolving as it goes. And so obviously control frameworks like FedRAMP are aware of this. And I was working on artificial intelligence systems that were going through FedRAMP type of authorization preparedness back in 2018, a very large computer company, 2017, beginning of 2018.
Uh-huh.
And we were looking at this as more of data protection, because there are data protection type of controls at the application layer that you have to show different data flow diagrams, who has access to it, where it's going, what it's doing. And so I think it falls within that. And so those controls that pertain to that, you have to take that white space that's available in the explanation for the control, and you have to describe how you're taking care of it. And so I think that there's going to be more controls that are specific to AI uh-huh. as we go. But right now, that's how I've seen it being handled, is looking at a basic data protection type of control question.
Sure. Yeah, I think kind of all of the backing, if you will, that NVIDIA saw from the federal government, I think it suggests that we intend to go big on the use of AI, you know, just collectively across all federal programs, because I don't imagine that we would have worked so hard towards something that if it was just going to be a flash in the pan. So I think AI is certainly here to stay. So hopefully that people do take it seriously and approach those things. Last question. So to be successful, either as a security leader or a practitioner, we'd like to ask everybody who comes on the show for three pieces of actionable advice for our listeners.
Yeah, sure thing. I would say, well, keep learning as much as you can and help out with other projects. It might not be your project that you're tasked to do, but if there's something you think will make a big impact, then apply to do that. Ask somebody if you can work on that. That's how I've found most of the very large projects that I've ever been allowed to do, which some of them I couldn't believe that I was allowed to do them, but then they turned out to be successful because I wanted to do what was best for the customer and get them a capability and get them something that was valuable to them.
Uh-huh.
I would say the second part is really ask a lot of questions. Ask people their view of what they're worried about with security in their company. It might be your chief legal officer. It might be your person in charge of product. It might be your chief technology officer, your CEO, your board members. Ask them a lot of questions and then write them down and go back and do really good research and be able to give them that business context of the reason you're doing things. Because a lot of people in my position, they had a technical career a long time ago. I was a Linux system administrator 24 years ago. And yeah, which was awesome. I loved doing that. But then I learned more things. I learned security things, and I learned how to security harden Linux and then systems and then deploy systems and applications. But then I started learning more of the business context, and that was of a lot of value. And so that would be my second piece of advice there, is to do that. And number three is never stop learning. Don't let yourself be complacent and say, oh, I know this little section, I'm going to just do that and not learn anymore. You can learn every day. You've got the biggest library at your fingertips. You know, if you want to learn about AI, do it. One of my friends learned about it in about a year and is one of the leading AI security people. So it's really cool to watch people how they're able to make something really good out of something they didn't think they were going to be doing about a year ago.
Sure. See, not me. I've been holding on to Linux 2.2. It's running all over my infrastructure. No,
that's
refused to change.
Love Linux. I got VMs running all over the place. It's great.
But no, thanks so much, Eric, for joining us today. Very insightful, like our chat before we pressed record here on the podcast. There's a lot of people who I think are very intimidated by a lot of the things that you just described. So we're very thankful that you were able to come and describe these things in not layman's terms, but at least reasonable terms that folks could understand, or at least now they know what to go look up, if nothing else. So thanks so much for joining us. If there are folks who want to either reach out to you for help, advice, or otherwise, or just to follow what you're working on, do you have social media and things like that that we can put into the show notes?
Sure thing. Yeah, thanks, David, for having me on the show. And to contact me, you can email at our website. There is a contact form at federalcyberdefense.com, and also our Fed Ninjas podcast. So that's out on Spotify and I think some other platforms. There's a way to get in contact with us there as well.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, and let's keep in touch.
Thanks, David. You too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of Cyber Risk podcast, brought to you by Team Cymry. For the latest episodes, please visit team-cymry.com or search Future of Cyber Risk on your podcast platform of choice. Thanks, and we'll catch you on the next episode.